Today's episode is brought to you by the Hippocratic Collective. Check out our shows and content at hippocratic-collective.com. This is Surgeons with Purpose, a show that redefines the surgeon's experience. Together, we'll normalize the taboo ways we think and feel about the world, all from a place of integrity. These are the conversations we aren't having, but should be. I'm your host, Dr. Mel Thacker. Hello, hello. Welcome back to the podcast. Today, we are going to talk about the fact that surgeons are human animals. That's right, you're a human animal, and what that means for you. Specifically, what it means in terms of burnout and losing our desire to do this job. Not that we're all going to lose our desire to do the job. I don't want to make that assumption. But a lot of us get to a point where we almost hit a wall. When we're young and bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, there's desire and there's joy injected into the work. And so burnout is much less likely to happen. But eventually, our capacity starts to shrink and our human animal starts to talk to us. And it's interesting because our human animal doesn't speak to us with words. It speaks to us in emotions. And that's why emotions are so important to understand, because they're information. And so if you're one of those surgeons who's walking around with just like a low-level angst, or you're unhappy and you don't know why, if you're like, when I was a kid, had I looked at where my life is today, I would be so proud of me. So why don't I feel fulfilled? You're not alone. And part of it is because there is an internal division within you. The way to heal that division is to get to know your human animal, to get to know who you are underneath your surgeon identity. I know I spoke about this in a previous podcast, but we're going to look at this through a little bit different lens, through the lens of what happens when we hold the profession against ourselves. It matters because it contributes to burnout, which, as you all know, and I don't have to give the stats, is a major problem. When we use the profession against ourselves, we no longer have a desire to do our work. We don't want to go to clinic. We don't want to IND that abscess. We don't want to reduce that fracture. And then it creates this almost internal dilemma, and we start to pretend. We pretend we want to stop what we are doing to go take care of that IND patient. Because if we don't pretend that we want to do it, then people will think we are lazy or that we shirk responsibility. And that's how we use the profession against ourselves. We don't want to be seen as someone who is lazy or weak or is a shirker. And so when a senior colleague asks us to take a patient that came in on their call, we tell ourselves that we have to take the patient for fear of how we would be perceived if we said no. It's such a strong cultural force that keeps us in that energy of self-denial and self-sacrifice. So it's no wonder we burn out. And what I'm noticing is that we all do it to ourselves. We people please and we fawn for fear of being sent to the principal's office, right? For fear of being seen as weak or lazy. And it's fascinating because who cares, right? Who cares if you say no to your senior colleague because you want to go to your daughter's dance recital? Who cares? So they're a little annoyed with you. Guess what? After the annoyance or the frustration passes and they're like, well, I guess I have to take care of this thing. Why didn't they take it? Then they're going to have respect for you. That anger or frustration about your no will turn into respect. But we say yes when we really mean no. And then we wonder why we continue to use the profession against ourselves. We say the profession demands that we say yes. And it's just a story. It's not true. And when I say we use the profession against ourselves, I word that carefully. Because I'm not saying the profession is forcing you to do anything, or that other people, your peers in this profession, are making you do anything against your will. We use the profession against ourselves. It's such an interesting concept, and it's not anyone's fault. There are no villains here. This is a problem that is the natural evolution of a system that demands self-sacrifice, a profession that demands self-sacrifice. So if you think back to when we were thinking about going into medicine or surgery, maybe when we were in high school, or if you were like me, when I was 13, I decided I'm going to be a doctor. I had never seen a doctor in my life that I can recall. I don't ever recall going to the pediatrician. My single mother was neglectful and failed to vaccinate us. That kind of shows you how neglectful she was. Not because she was against vaccines, but because she was just neglectful and decided that homeopathy and astrology were better forms of medicine than Western medicine. And so I never saw a doctor that I can remember in my memory. But for some reason, I loved the idea of helping people. I loved the idea of altruism. I was obsessed with altruism as a young kid. And I think it came from maybe like a need to be meaningful, to have purpose, to create meaning and purpose with this human life. And that was where I put all of my purpose eggs in the physician basket. I was like, that's what I'm going to do. Physicians help people. I'm going to get into a profession of service. I'm going to help people. And I don't think my story is unique. I mean, I think a lot of us tell ourselves that we're going to choose a service profession to create impact in the world and to make our lives meaningful and purposeful. Maybe we see our physician parents doing it. Maybe that was your story. But for whatever reason, the profession calls to you. It's a calling, right? And the idea of having the ability to heal humans, especially as surgeons, to fix human body problems, broken human bodies with our hands, is incredible. I think when we're young, we're just like getting into the profession. All we do is think about getting to that next level. So in college, we're like, let's go to medical school. And then it's just trying to survive medical school and fill our brain with knowledge, trying to ace our steps and graduate and then match into residency. And then match day comes and we're happy or we're sad or we have mixed feelings about it. And then we have to just move somewhere else. And then it's like, okay, well, I got to just survive residency and learn everything I can and get all the skills that I can so that I don't hurt people. And then we're just like thrown into attendinghood. And we never really stop to reevaluate. Nobody takes us aside between college, medical school, and residency to ask us to reevaluate, to say like, hey, why are you doing this again? Like, why are you going into this profession? We don't sit there and ask ourselves every year, like reflect every year. We don't have the long game in sight. We get stuck in the short game. We try to beat the short game. And because we try to beat the short game, we completely lose touch with the part of us that cares about the long game. And that part of us that cares about the long game is perhaps the most important part of us. It's our essential self, which is the essence of us. It is the part of us that makes us who we are. It was the spark within us that said, hey, go into medicine or go into surgery. That was our essential self talking to us. And we were like, okay. And then we got lost because we got lost in the process and trying to keep up with the system and our peers and playing the game of being the best. We got lost in the short game. We completely lost sight of the long game. And if we don't realign with who we are, we're going to find ourselves suffering. The part of us, the essence of us, evolves and changes with time. Our essential self evolves and changes. This happens with every human. It doesn't stay constant. We have to frequently re-engage with it. What does that part want? Who is that part? Who are you? What do you want? What creates meaning for you? What gives you purpose? It's like playing a video game. And then you beat the video game. You rocked it in medical school. You beat the video game again. Got into residency. You beat the video game again. Graduated residency. Got into fellowship. And then it's like, then you're done. And then what? You have to get back in touch with the person who wanted to play the video game in the first place. Who is that? That version of you has changed and evolved. That version of you is no longer the same person. Our cells turn over every 7 years. You are like a whole different human being. Aside from your stem cells, like every single thing about you is new. It was a completely different human body that decided to sign up for this profession than where you are now. Likely, unless you're a medical student listening. So how do you get to know that part of you? How do you get to know your human animal? It makes sense how the system became the way it is, doesn't it? How it became one of toxic martyrdom and self-sacrifice and hurtful altruism. Altruism to the point of burnout and suicide in more instances than we want to have awareness of. We give so much of ourselves that we completely exhaust ourselves into the ground, and then some of us end up doing harmful things to ourselves because we don't see a way out. We get stuck in a corner, and then something tips us over the edge and we don't see a way out, and that's when we end up hurting ourselves. Or we try to distract ourselves with pleasures because we just want to feel better. We all start doing that very early on, right? Distracting ourselves with pleasures. That is a big coping mechanism. You have to understand that you are an animal and you have to take care of your human animal. How are you caring for your human animal? It's so interesting that when we're young and we go into the profession wanting to sacrifice the needs of our animal, we want to. It's almost romantic. There's something intimate about doing that. There's something intimate about staying awake for 30 hours, seeing a patient in the trauma bay, taking them to the OR, doing an X-lap, suturing a facial degloving injury from a bus accident or whatever, you know, putting Humpty Dumpty back together again, whatever the trauma is, and then transferring that patient to the SICU and then managing them in the SICU with all of their ups and downs, resuscitating them, doing whatever we need to do until we finally get them stable. And taking however long it needs to take and not signing off to another resident, just staying there from every moment of instability, from trauma bay to OR to stability, all the ups and downs and ebbs and flows in the middle until we're like, okay, now I can leave. And we're so tired and a whole day has passed. Maybe some of you are too new into training. You don't remember that. But those of you who trained in the heyday, who, you know, trained before the work hour rules, you'll remember that. And there's something romantic and intimate about it. This isn't unique to surgery, obviously. It could also be medicine. Somebody comes in with a really serious medical issue, and then you resuscitate them in the ER, and then you get them into the ICU, and you keep doing all of the things to keep them stable while the patient keeps trying to die on you. And maybe that takes 24 hours, and you don't leave. You stay with them. You stay with them until they are better, and you don't sign off to the next resident. There's something romantic and intimate about that. We want to do that. We were willing to do that when we were young. But eventually we lose that willingness because our animal is going to want to tell us something. It's going to want to protest. Our human animal is going to say, listen, you can't do this forever. Like, I have needs too. I need to sleep. I need to get restorative sleep every night like every other human. I need rest. I need some time to relax. I need time to do nothing. I need to lay on the floor and just listen to my breath. I need to be silent. I need to not be productive. I need to move my body. I need to go outside. I need to get fresh air. I need to be in nature. I need to interact with other humans. I need other humans to touch me. I need to hug. I'm a social animal. I need to know that I matter just because I exist. That I'm not just worthy because of my abilities as a surgeon, because of my skills as a surgeon or my knowledge as a physician. I need to know that I am good and worthy just because I'm me. Despite all of my accomplishments, take them all away, I am still amazing. Please let me know that I'm worthy simply because I breathe, because I'm here. Our animal needs to know that. And when our animal starts protesting against the part of us that says, hey, we need to produce. Like, we need to go climb that academic ladder and make all the money. We need to take care of the patients day and night. We need to do all of these things. We decided to do this. We signed up for this. This is our calling. When our animal protests against that part, that's when we create suffering. That's when we start to use the profession against ourselves. We start to use the altruism against ourselves. We start to use the self-sacrifice against ourselves. Nobody told us that we had to keep doing it. But we're looking around us and we're looking at all the other people who are okay with the self-sacrifice or who seem to be okay with the self-sacrifice. And we're like, well, I guess we have to keep going. And because every physician, every surgeon has a different timeline, there is no comparison. We all have different burning out points, a different point where we all have this moment of reckoning, where we reach this precipice where our animal says, listen, you got to stop. Like, enough is enough. You can't do this anymore. And for me, it was anxiety and insomnia and panic attacks. Like, my human animal was like, listen, bitch, you got to stop. I'm telling you, you got to stop. And my human animal spoke to me in the form of severe insomnia over a period of 3 months. I barely slept more than an hour or two. I would wake up crying every single morning because I was just so exhausted and couldn't imagine having to go see patients in clinic or go to the OR, but I did it anyway. Until finally my animal was like, okay, you're not going to take the insomnia signal. Well, we're going to throw some panic attacks at you. And then I was like, well, okay, I guess I can't do my job while I'm having panic attacks. And that's when I stopped and I sat down with my human animal and I was like, all right, I see you. Let's talk. And so know that your human animal will talk to you in signals. It will not use words. It's not going to say, hey, you got to stop. And because we communicate in words, we're a verbal species, it's not normal for us to want to communicate in a nonverbal way. So you have to pay attention. You have to have an awareness of your human animal. It will communicate with you in the form of anxiety and suffering and dissatisfaction, even low-level angst or frustration, irritation, lack of purpose. Your animal is going to talk to you. It's going to speak to you. And when we look at other people whose animals don't seem to be protesting, we're like, wait, they seem to be fine. They're like in their 50s or 60s and they're still going strong. That's when we start to use the needs of our human animal against ourselves too. We start to think that there's something wrong with us, that we are broken. Because maybe the physician who seems to never burn out, who's the first one at the hospital and the last one to leave, who's like hawking for cases in the ER at the age of 50, maybe they have a network of support that is buttressing their lifestyle. Like maybe they have a wife at home who takes care of the kids, does all of the shopping, all of the laundry, all of the things, all of the child rearing, and all they have to do is go to work and get paid for it and take care of patients. And their wife is basically the COO of the household, the operations person, right? And that's just one example. There's also the example of the humans who never stop to consider who they are without the profession. And so they're living and breathing surgery or medicine, and it becomes essential for them. It gives them a reason to live. It's almost like an addiction to work, an addiction to medicine, an addiction to surgery. Because without it, they're lost. And there's plenty of examples of that as well. I got to that point. But, you know, the classic example that the system was built upon is the male surgeon who has this badass operations wife at home, right? Who's doing all of the adulting. That is how the system formed around that avatar. Not around the avatar of the female surgeon who is the operations person at home and the surgeon during the day and at night when she's on call, who comes home to an entire second job. She does her first job and then sacrifices herself incessantly doing that job, just like culture instructed her to do. And then she comes home to take care of kids and get food on the table and go grocery shopping and do laundry and manage a household, all of the things. Can you blame someone who has a full-time job as a surgeon and is also the COO of a family of four or five or however many there are for burning out? There is no comparison between the person who burns out and has to do essentially two really hard jobs and the person who doesn't burn out as quickly and has a whole army of help at home. How can you compare the surgeon who doesn't have an operations person at home and has to do all of the things themselves and the surgeon who does have an operations person at home, like an incredible one? There's just no comparison. And that's why there is no comparative suffering in this profession. There is no comparative burnout. This is not a race to see who is tougher. This has nothing to do with mental toughness, physical toughness, or emotional toughness. This is not a matter of willpower. Every surgeon's lived experience is different, and every physician will meet this place on their own time, and it's nobody's business how we get there or when we get there. It's nobody's business but your own how and when you get there. So if you've been there, and you're burnt out, or you're feeling it coming, or your animal is talking to you, you're like, I'm saying these words, and you're like, oh my gosh, I think my human animal has been talking to me too. Just know that you're not alone, and your timeline is your timeline. So what can you do about it then, right? First, notice it. Have awareness. You know, I don't want to take care of that drunk who smashed up his car at 2 a.m. That's good to know. I don't want to drain the IV drug user's abscess. I want to stay at my kid's soccer game. Good to know. Or maybe, you know, that's not even your story. Maybe you still love the sacrifice. That's great if you still love the sacrifice. I myself stopped loving the sacrifice. I remember a time when I did, and then I stopped. In fact, I started hating the sacrifice, the self-sacrifice, the altruism so much that I developed a complete aversion to it. And so if you feel yourself getting there where you're almost developing resentment towards the profession, it's because you have been at odds. You have had this internal division happening within you where you have a part of yourself that's like, hey, we need to like take care of ourselves and do some self-care and like have a vacation, not a vacation where we're just distracted and trying to pretend it's a vacation, but a vacation where we actually do some real self-care. We do some journaling, we look inward, we get really good restorative sleep, we do some meditating, we spend some time alone. We're not just like buzzing with that internal dialogue or trying to be productive. There's a part of you that's like, hey, we need to go out and like have a really long walk in nature. And so that part of you keeps calling to you. And then the other part of you is like, yeah, but I have to pay off my student loans. This is the profession I signed up for, and I have no other discernible skills. There is nothing else I can possibly do. This is the only thing I know how to do. I'm a surgeon. I don't know how to do anything else. And so I have to do this if I want to be able to have financial freedom and create the life I want to create and go on fancy vacations and buy the house that I want to buy and the car that I want to buy. And so you have these two sides of you that are at odds, right? And eventually it gets to the point where you might develop resentment and you might develop aversion to the sacrifice. If that part of you that really wants some self-care, that essential part of you, your essential self, fighting with your social self is like, nope, this is a calling. You signed up for this. You have to do these things. And your essential self is like, yeah, but I want to eat, sleep, rest, and play. And I want to like, I really want to go play. You know, like it's a child in you, essentially. And if you keep denying that part of you, you're probably going to develop some resentment. And if you're like me, you'll develop an aversion to the sacrifice. And so what can you do? It's normal to want to resist this. Nobody wants to feel suffering. So if you are one of the surgeons out there, one of the many surgeons out there who has a low-level angst, who is frustrated, irritated, anxious, or even suffering on a daily basis, if you are feeling a mixture of negative emotions on a daily basis, if you dread going to clinic, if you dread going to the OR, if anxiety, fear, and dread are like some of your top emotions, or maybe frustration and irritation are some of your top emotions, there is internal division going on between your social self and your essential self, between your animal, your human animal, and the part of you that wants what it wants, that wants to follow along with societal norms, that bought into a story, this is what I'm going to do. Whenever you decided to enter in this career and you're like, this is my plan. I'm going to go to med school. I'm going to go to residency. I'm going to maybe do a fellowship, and then I'm going to get a job, make a lot of money and help a lot of people. And then I'm going to be happy and I'm going to buy a house and have a family. And yet you're not. And that's okay. And so the first thing you need to do is to notice that and to stop resisting it. Stop wishing it away. Stop avoiding it. Stop pretending it's not there and just stay with it. Then the next step is allowance and acceptance. When we allow and accept, we regain access to our intellectual capacity. When we are in resistance, when we are in irritation and suffering and all of those negative emotions, anxiety, we don't have capacity. We limit our capacity because those emotions signal to our animal that there's danger, that things are not okay. And so we have to find a place where we are okay. And so when you notice what's happening in you and you allow it and accept it and recognize that it's not going to kill you, it's okay to have dissatisfaction in your career. It's okay to start looking inward and questioning your life. That's totally fine. The next thing you're going to want to do is start to ask yourself, what is great about my job? What do I love about my job? Look for the good. Mine for the evidence of the good, mine for the great, mine for the things that you love, for the joy. If you can get to gratitude, great. Find gratitude. Some people can't get there, but if you can get there. Be grateful. Take the time to direct your brain to look at what is good, what is great, what you love, what you're grateful for about your profession, about your job. Once you do that, regularly, you start to feel more okay. You start to feel less dysregulated. And from there, then you can evaluate your situation with a clear head. Because you are totally okay where you are with your current profession, wherever you are in the world, wherever you are in training, wherever you are in your career, you are okay. And when you start to show your animal that you're safe, that you're okay, your human animal is like, okay, we're safe. We're not in any danger. Then it's going to stop wanting to run away. It's going to stop wanting to resist. And that's when you open up your capacity and you start to have clarity of the world. It's like you get this narrow view when you're stuck in resistance. You just have this narrow lens. You just get one piece of the puzzle, but then you open up your capacity with acceptance and awareness and noticing and allowance and non-resistance and getting to okayness. And then you're like, okay, well, now I see the whole world so clearly. It's like you get a whole different lens of your world, of the world around you and the world internally within you. And so that's what I would recommend that you do if any of this is resonating. This is such a timely podcast. Next week, I will be talking to a family physician in Canada. Her name is Dr. Joan Chan, who is also the host of The Other Human in the Room. And so it's such a beautiful segue to be talking about this, to transition right into discussing what it's like being a human in the profession of medicine and surgery. So please listen to your human animal, take care of your human animal, pay attention to the signals that come in the form of emotion and start to engage with them. Stop ignoring them, stop suppressing them, stop pretending they're not there. They need your attention. They will get your attention in one way or another. And it's much better for them to get your attention where you're actually looking at them and facing them and engaging with them than when they grab you from behind and like shake you to make you pay attention. I hope you all have a great week and I will see you next week. Hey, surgery is the one profession that has not figured out how to capitalize on the magic of coaching. That stops today. The Empowered Surgeons Group is a revolutionary, transformative group coaching experience that is now enrolling. It is enrolling forever, but the reason you're going to want to start today is because you don't want to waste another minute to feel better. You don't have to spend your life feeling anxious or angsty or frustrated or irritated on the daily. You're going to want to sign up at courses.melthackercoaching.com/courses/empowered surgeon or click the link in the show notes. I will see you inside the group.